Story Chat with John Fornoff, the art and passion of storytelling. Here's your host, Brian Bulabush.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of Story Chat, our little corner of the internet where we hope to inspire and encourage and educate you guys on the art and passion of storytelling. John, you mentioned that it's been kind of a rough week for you, kind of a somber week. Tell me what's going on.
Well, you know, actually, it's in a way, it's a celebration week too. My aunt Pat, Pat Clapp, she was 92 years old.
Oh,
and
wow!
She was an amazing lady. I'll tell you more about her, but it's we were celebrating her. Like she died this past week, and so we just went. I just came back from her funeral actually today, and so she's been on my mind, and I wanted to share her story with you guys.
Well, and first off, me, and I'm sure everybody listening. Sorry to hear that. Mourn your loss with you.
Thank you.
We've all lost, and what am I trying to say?
We've all gone through this.
You know, we've all gone through it.
Yeah. And it's, you know, she exemplified a life well lived, like lived to the full. She was just an amazing lady. So yeah, I'll share her story a little bit, and I'm excited to share because here's why I want to share this story with you all. I get questions about how do I adapt a real story to with dramatic elements, the dramatic flow, like, you know, act one, act two, act three. How do I do that? How do I adapt my story, my true story? Or let's say you're kind of like based on a true story. You're doing like, it's got some fictionalized elements, but it's based on truth. How do you do that? How do you take that true story? And I'm gonna tell her story and you'll see how the story beats work and how that, even in real life stories, there's a sense of dramatic tension, there's conflict, there's rising action, there's a climax, dark night of the soul, all those things that are in part of story. And so as I share her story, I will be pointing out those different points. And I hope that'll help you as you're telling a real story and adapting it for whatever you want to do.
Well, tell us a little bit more about her. Where she how did she encourage you? Because she clearly was a very massive encouragement with you in a lot of ways.
She was amazing. She was, my sister and I were 4 and 5, and my parents divorced when I was about that age. And so we would go over her house and sit in her Davenport, and not a couch, it was a Davenport, because it was like, everything was like first class with her. She's a very classy lady.
Davenport?
Davenport, yeah.
What
it's a fancy fancy word for a couch.
Oh, okay. See, I just know it as a couch. I've never heard that phrase.
Yeah. And she was very classy, but also very warm. And she would sit down and on the couch. Come on, sit down on the couch. And we'd sit down on the couch. And she'd look you right in the eyes. She goes, "Now, tell me all about your week. Tell me, you know." And she would like, "I want to hear all about it." And she would just like listen to you, right? And she just loved well. She loved her family, loved us, my sister and I, just love people. And, but let me, I'll just go ahead and share her story and I'll show you how it lines up with storytelling. Hmm. And, it is, and feel free to interrupt here, Brian.
Oh, like, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll feel a little guilty about interrupting a recently deceased person's story. So,
oh, no. This, you know, Aunt Pat was, she was full of life and she wasn't like, yeah, and it's fine. Feel free to do that. So I'll tell you what I'm going to do for our, now I realize that some people are listening, all right, but I want to go ahead and show you, for people that check out the video, I'll show you a picture of Aunt Pat here so you can kind of see who I'm talking about here. So, and I'll describe her to people who are just listening. Here we go. And there's my Aunt Pat. And she was,
lovely.
Here she's 89 years old. She didn't look like an 80. I mean, it's amazing. And she lived till 92. And she and her husband, Harry, they were in love. They just loved it, just adored each other. 69 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. So wow. She's 89 here. She looks lovely. She looks amazing. And talking to people who don't have the video, and she's got that look in her eyes. She's very aware, very alert, you know,
very mischievous. I can kind of see.
Yeah, she has that too. And that mischievous side comes out when she's 86, she wanted to do this, and that is to ride a motorcycle. So here's a picture of her riding a motorcycle. She's about to get on the motorcycle. And that's what she wanted to do for her 86th birthday. She was like that. Just had that sense of adventure.
It's not loading up.
It's not loading up.
I don't see that particular picture.
I wonder why. I'm sharing the screen.
I still see the Facebook photo.
Okay, but anyway, just picture her riding a motorcycle.
Okay, yeah, I can do that.
There you go. All right. So let me, so it's interesting, her story, as I share her story, we'll show how it lines up with storytelling here, and I'll get back on my video here, so I'll stop sharing the screen here, I guess. There we go. So Aunt Pat was, this is back in the 60s, and she was, quote unquote, the ordinary, she was far from ordinary, housewife. That's how they described them back then, which is kind of sad because there are many extraordinary people, moms and quote unquote housewives. But she was in the 1960s. That's, you know, that she was a stay-at-home mom, that kind of thing. And Uncle Harry, her husband went to work. He was an engineer. And, but she got involved in all these like charitable things and that kind of stuff. She was a really involved person. And she started doing stuff for the mentally challenged people, just giving them, starting a kindergarten for them, that kind of thing. So it starts off as a normal kind of like, you know, Leave It to Beaver, all that kind of stuff back then, the mom and pop kind of thing. And, you know, that kind of thing. So then she had my cousin Jeff, and then she gave birth to David. There's three kids, and David was the middle one, and David had Down syndrome. So it's interesting. She's working for the mentally challenged, and now she has a kid with Down syndrome. And she met. So here's ordinary housewife, right? There's the ordinary life, right? Ordinary life, ordinary wife. So, but she's not ordinary at all. And then inciting incident, she's got, she finds out her son has Down syndrome. And I remember her telling me this. This was like, she felt like she was in a deep pit. I mean, like, it's just like her whole world turned upside down.
Because that was back in the day where that was kind of hidden, right? That was almost taboo.
Yeah, it was almost like, yeah, you don't, it's a family secret kind of thing. And it, and so, and yeah, exactly right. Good point. And so she felt just like she was in a deep, dark pit. But she realized, she really felt God's hand reach down and pick her out of that pit. And she realized this was not a burden. This was a mission for her life. And she started championing her son and started championing the rights of mentally challenged people everywhere. That became her fire, her mission. And so that pit turned into her passion. It's kind of interesting how that can work, how that flips around. So that's her inciting incident. So she, here's what, from the very first, what happened back then? If you had a mentally challenged son or daughter, you would get a letter from a doctor, like a doctor, like that was the expert, right? That's the guy that knew what they're doing kind of thing. And they would say, we would advise that your family put your son or daughter in an institution. That's really the best for your family because it's not healthy for them to be inside your family. It's not good for the other siblings. It's not good for you, not good for them. It's best for them. You put them in an institution.
Well, and that was that was a loony bin, right?
Well, that's the term for it.
The colloquial. I guess that's exactly, fair. And I didn't even mean it as a derogatory, but I guess you are correct in that. Sorry.
Yeah, keep going. No. And that's, and it's a shame because those people are, there's wonderful, beautiful people in there. And so they would, that's what parents would do. They would send them off to the mental institution. And, but Aunt Pat, something in her gut said, no. It's like, I can't put my son in a mental institution. I can't do that. I'm his mom, you know, and we're his family. What am I doing? Now, a lot of people did that. That was their decision, and that, not downing them or whatever. I'm saying, for Aunt Pat, she said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to keep David here and raise him up as normal a life as possible. You know, teach him, you know, they said, you know, uneducable, you know, you can't educate. Well, she taught him how to read and write, all that kind of stuff. So anyway, she started championing him. And one thing she did was so now.
Well, if you could tell us a little bit about David, like what's he like? Because just to kind of give it a little context, because I know now that there's been more science to it, there's a spectrum. Because I know people who technically have Down syndrome, but you can barely tell. Yeah. Or there's the complete opposite. Where did he lie on that? What was he into? What was he like?
Probably. Oh, just the most generous heart, the biggest heart of anybody you'd ever meet. I mean, he would John, and he give me a big hug, and he loved big hugs, full of love. He painted. And he became a painter, and he, in fact, he painted in this competition with just regular people, not like this is the mentally challenged people. And he won.
Oh, wow.
And he would give speeches. He would travel. He would like, she taught him just to have a confidence about himself. And he was very enterprising. He had this mischievous part about him. He kind of did things a little wink, like he would tell little jokes. He started his mom and him started a company called Arc Barks. And these are like, Arc is the old term for the, they called it retarded citizens back then, but they have these little dog treats and they have all mentally challenged people putting together these dog treats and all the profits go to this organization. They started this company and it's still thriving today.
Oh, so, is this him? Yeah.
What's that?
Like, I'm literally looking at the website right now. Is this him on the front of it?
Can you share a screen?
Or? If you go to arcbarks.com.
Mm-hmm.
Stand by. Let me.
If you can share your screen, I'll tell you. So here we go. Sharing screen. That's not him, but that's one
that's
of them.
Him.
But that is those are the Arc Barks. Those are the And so he was.
And this is kind of her legacy in a way.
One part of her legacy, and I'll tell you more later. This is one of them. And they started in their kitchen, and their dog got fat. You know, trying all the different kind of treats, you know?
Oh, and that's so funny.
That was Aunt Pat. And that was David. They were just amazing people, So there's,
That's really cool.
Yeah. And I'll start with her and David. So, she was very concerned for the rights of the mental challenge there with her son and all that. And she went on a tour of Polk, P-O-L-K. It was a mental institution in Pennsylvania. And she was going on a tour with some other people. And so they're taking her on this wonderful tour. And there's all these, there's beautiful little curtains and stuff and little tables and little places for them to eat. And it was just wonderful in this place as they're going through this this tour. And they're taking them through there. And Aunt Pat says, in her gut, she's going, something's not right here. Mm-hmm. This is, we're not getting the full story. So she hung at the back of the tour. All right. And as people went forward, they went around the corner and she slipped off and did her own tour.
Of course.
That was my Aunt Pat. And she was horrified what she saw. So she went into the cafeteria there and they had in this dining room, this big old wide open dining room. They had a line of toilets in the dining room with no doors, nowhere, that you just sat there and in the dining room where they would go to the bathroom right there in the dining room. They had the cribs in this one place. Had so many cribs were crammed in this room, you couldn't even get to the center. You couldn't even reach the kids. And kids are crying in there and everything. It was awful. She went into another room and there are cages. People put in cages. I'm talking about little cages, like they're animals.
What year was this?
This is in the 60s.
Wow.
This is the 60s.
I mean, that's something you hear about in medieval times, but...
Oh, this happened like in our recent history. This was in the 60s. This was the norm. And she was asking, what did this little girl do? This little 5-year-old girl. And they said, well, she something about a doll. She took a doll from, or she wanted a doll and something went wrong. So they put her in a cage. So they put people in cages. They had it was awful what they did. And they're just like, they're people just like half clothed, walking around and stuff. She said, and they were very understaffed, but still, it's just awful. So they go through and my aunt is just like, oh man, she now has a cause, right? Mm. So she gives a speech to hundreds of people that night. And one of the people in the room was the state director of the Health and Human Services in Pennsylvania, something like that. And that was one of the like top state health official in the room. And she heard this. So my aunt gave this story. She always tells when she tells the story, she says, I was going to give a keynote speech, my first keynote speech, Christian Worldview Film Festival. And I said, hey, Pat, what do I do? What do I do? Because then she's a great talker. She says, you know what? I don't use notes. She says, I just speak from my heart. Mm. It's like, wow. And that's what she did. She spoke from her heart. And what she did was she used Oliver Twist, the story of Oliver Twist. And she told the story beats of that and brought it to life. Like, please, sir, I want some more. And how they're putting cages and all that.
Yep.
She had people crying in the room. The state director comes up to her afterwards. She says, I want to take a tour of Polk with you tomorrow. I'm going to send a car by 7:30 at your hotel tomorrow morning, and we're going to go see Polk together. So
wow.
That next morning, 7:30, car arrives, And Pat goes with the state director. They go to Polk. All right, together. There's the state director, right? The big cheese. And they take the real tour. And this lady was so, she was like incensed. The director, by the way, of Polk, the director of Polk was not there. He was like at home or whatever. And he gets a call.
Oh boy. Yeah, just imagine being that guy. Your your boss's boss's boss shows up one day.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, they're doing bad things to these people, but you gotta feel for the guy just little bit.
Oh, yes. Well, a little bit. Then the guy shows up. He says, oh, it's so wonderful to see you. Can I get you anything? And the lady looks him in the eye and says, you're fired. Just like that. It's like, wow, boom. He's out of the picture. That was the beginning. He was taken
poor
out.
Guy.
No, he was abusing people.
Yes, that's fair. But
just there's no sympathy. I have no sympathy for the antagonist in this one.
I guess that's fair. I guess that's fair.
He wasn't just a jerk. He was like abusing people. You know. Yeah. And so anyway, that was the beginning of the end. They started to shut down the institution. Then Pennhurst was another one. So you see the story beats here. Here's just a regular quote unquote person. By the way, no, like C.S. Lewis says, there's no ordinary person. I love that. That's a great quote. Where's that from?
I don't know,
but he said it and I'm taking it. Look it up somewhere. I don't know where. I just remember seeing The Reluctant Convert and they said that. So are you there?
Yeah, no, I'm here. My screen is frozen.
Oh, okay, sorry about that.
I don't know why.
Okay, no problem. Audio folks don't even care.
Yeah, technical difficulties on my end. I'm going to have to shut this because keep going.
Okay.
Don't interrupt.
Okay, so you see how the story, ordinary life, all of a sudden inciting incident. She's got a Down syndrome child. Now she becomes a champion for him, and now the story expands. Now we're raising the stakes. Now she wants to become a champion for mentally challenged people, more than just her son, but any mentally challenged person. So here's what happened. My aunt's spirited efforts to shut down mental institutions that were abusing people happened in Pennsylvania. So it was Polk, it was Pennhurst, and it started a wave that swept through the country. They started shutting mental institutions down all over the country that were abusing people. So here's what happened.
That's actually really interesting. Sorry to interrupt.
Go for it.
My dad is a photographer and he likes taking pictures of abandoned buildings. Well, what's the most recent abandoned type of building? He loves seeing sanatoriums or those kind of, and he would tell me the stories on these places and when they got shut down. And it's super cool how your aunt is a part of that. And because I don't know if you know this, but the way they dealt with people with Down syndrome they would put women in the sanatoriums if they were too ornery or above their station. Like they would call them crazy if they did too much.
Oh, wow.
It really didn't change from the medieval times.
Wow.
Slash the 1700s up to the 1960s.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
And it's super cool to hear that your aunt is a part of what shut down a large portion of history.
Oh yeah.
That's been shooed away.
Dark history. Yes. Yeah. Oh man. I asked her, how did you get involved with it? She said, I just had to do the right thing. It was just like put in front of her and she just had to do it. She knew it. That became her mission. So you would think, you know, she shut down these mental institutions. She did championing the cause of the mental challenge. By the way, they also experimented. They did dark, awful medical experiments on these children, a lot of times without letting the parents know. And in the cause of good science, you know, that's science, you know, it was awful, awful, awful what they did. Yes. And so,
no, seriously. Don't look this up like that. That is an actual warning. Don't look up what they would do to these people because it's not good. It is not good stuff.
Well, Aunt Pat knew about that stuff, and she was a firecracker. You know, I have to do something. You know, when you're confronted with something like that, so you would think here she is shutting down these awful institutions that are abusing. And by the way, I don't know if every institution abused them, but a lot of them did.
It was like a large majority
of
them.
Yeah. So shut those down. And you'd think she'd be held as a hero, right? No. In fact, she had all these parents that were feeling, imagine you send your kid away, you know, the kind of thing, and everything's solved there. And all of a sudden the institution shuts down. What are you going to do with the kid now? That I don't know if it's really a kid. It's really more a secret, dark family secret. What do you do? And there's, plus they have the feelings of guilt. What are we going to do? They're shutting it. They're messing up their world, right? And so they got angry. The parents got livid. They burned her in effigy, which, And if, some people don't know what that means. They made a dummy of her and they burned it. That's how much they hated. They burned it. And that's how much they hated her. They found her address, her home address. And it was, she got tons and tons of mail, like bags and she would open up and just awful curses, threats, all that kind of stuff. People would go up and down her street. They would just kind of like just circle around her street. And she's got, you know, she's got three kids and she's a mom, you know, and just hate. And one night she gets a call in the middle of the night and somebody's threatening her life. And she remembers the whole bed was shaking. And because she was just so upset.
Understandably.
Something in her, there's a verse in the Bible that says perfect love casts out all fear. Mm. There's something about your love for people will champion you past your fear.
Yeah.
That's what happened for her. Her love for people, her love for her son, her love for those that couldn't speak for themselves, her love overcame her fear. And she became even a stronger champion for them. And she came up with, so her plan now, she wanted to give the mentally challenged kids a right to an education. So on her kitchen table, she had all these lawyers and stuff on her kitchen table. They crafted this law to give the mentally challenged the right to an education. It passed in Pennsylvania, became state law. That state law became the model for a federal law that was passed by Congress. That one that we've written on her kitchen table became a law passed by Congress, giving mentally challenged people the right to an education. That was my Aunt Pat. She spearheaded that. And it took a team. Yes, it took a team, but she was champion.
Yeah.
And so now
every team needs a leader.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And she was there. She was there. And so they got the law passed. And now there is a new world for these mentally challenged people. No longer are they kept in cages. No longer are they treated like animals, you know, experimented on medically. All those awful things. Those were shut down because a lot of what my Aunt Pat did, and she encouraged others as well. And now it's a new world for those kids. And now they have a right to an education. And it's all because of my Aunt Pat. She will talk about a remarkable lady. So I'm bragging on my Aunt Pat because she was somebody very special. Just, I mean, once in a lifetime, you meet somebody like that, right? But I also was taking you through beats of a story. That was a real story that happened. And I'll take you very quickly. I'm going to rewind very quickly and we'll go just hit those story beats real quick. Ordinary world of the hero. She was a quote unquote, the ordinary wife at home kind of thing. Inciting incident. She's got a Down syndrome. She gave birth to a Down syndrome child. David, crossing the threshold. She went to visit Polk. That was her crossing the threshold. She went crossing the threshold. You're going from ordinary world into extraordinary world. The twist is she finds out it's not what it seems. Everything looks good on the outside, but not. And she finds out the real story. She goes, takes her own tour. That's the twist. The reversal. She starts to champion the cause of the mentally challenged, and she gets hate back, and it escalates. She's burned an effigy. She's got the mail drop. Tons of mail comes in. All these, and then the death threat. That's the dark night of the soul. There in the middle of the night, dark night of the soul. She's got to decide: am I going to quit, or am I going to move forward? That's her dark night. All hope is lost. Moment. What is she going to do? She's going to quit. She can move on. Her love compelled her to move on. So now she has a new plan. She wants to champion the cause of mentally challenged, and champion their cause for education. The final showdown, she goes, she gets a law passed in the state of Pennsylvania. That law goes to Congress, and she's part of spearheading that law. And now it becomes law. And now the new world is, we got a new world for mentally challenged people because my Aunt Pat. So there you go. Every one of those beats of the story lines up with what we talked about. Remember when we did our show on structure, mm-hmm. all those 10 beats, boom, 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 there they are. And that's that. So you line up any great story and you'll see it follows that same pattern. It's pretty amazing.
Well, I mean, what if you do, if it doesn't?
Don't do
I
it.
I mean, like, no. No, I guess that's fair.
No,
but there's bound to be like a couple moments probably in her story that does, or another story that you could probably, I think of off the top of my head, that just don't quite line up.
Well, oh, sure. Like, that'll happen.
Yeah.
Well, here's some things you can do. I did a documentary on John LaFleur. It was called Quiet Revolution and it got an Emmy, which is, I'm real excited about.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. I'm very excited. So it's an amazing story. It's a true story. And this black male man teams up with the white mayor of Mobile, Alabama, and together they dismantle segregation in the South in the 40s and 50s. Way before Martin Luther King or Rosa Parks, they inspired those people, inspired Martin Luther King. But anyway, the story, it didn't quite line up with all those beats. So sometimes as I was telling the story, I didn't change the story because it's a true story. It's a documentary, right? I don't change the story, but what I did was I'll hit a story beat. Like it didn't quite line up. So sometimes I'll put this incident before this. So I changed the timing of incidents sometimes to line up. So you can do that. I just changed the timing of it. So it lined up with the beat. So it escalated. It's real important. You escalate your story. It can't be like this big thing happens and this little thing and not so much exciting thing. That makes for a boring story, right? You got to escalate that action. Escalations is number 6 on there. So I would change the beats a little bit. I wouldn't change the story itself.
Well, now the inner historian / whatever in me is going,
yes. But
then that's not the real story. That's not how it actually happened. What do you think of those? Because I have been that person.
It actually happened
that way. Oh, yeah. It happened this way. So,
well, here's what I did. It is the real story. Every element happened, but not exactly in that order. And so I don't put dates on it. In 1937, this happened. In 1942, this happened. I don't put dates on it. That would be dishonest. So I've got all the events.
You know, that's actually true. But, it would be dishonest. That's a real good way to.
Yeah.
And largely for me, I've gotten to the point where if it follows the spirit of the original story of kind of the original author intent, if that makes sense for a real life story, then it's fine. Fine by me because it's telling the spirit of the story well.
Yeah. And that's what you want to do too. That's adapting stories. That's another thing too. How do you adapt? That's a whole other show we can do on that. But yeah, that's how you do. So there's the story of Aunt Pat, and that's a real story. And you can take your real story. Let's say you've got in. I got to tell my grandpa's story. He was in the war, or my great aunt did this or whatever. You've got a story in the family, or your own story, and you want to know how do I tell this. Use that outline. Oh, here's a little trick. I'll tell you a little trick. This is a little trick I do. Some people have trouble getting started with a story. Let's say you're writing it, you're having trouble, or they're having trouble getting it down on page. Here's a quick trick you can do. Record it. Just record it. Like talk to somebody, talk to
an interview.
And
basically,
interview, right. And just tell your story, from the start to the beginning, just like you're telling somebody else. Right. Now you take that recording and just, you write it in, you transcribe it. All right. And now you got to, you got to do editing and all
that. Yeah.
That's a great way to get it going. Some people say, I don't know. How do I do that? Just talk, tell your story. And then we can edit later.
I think it was Robert McKee said something along the lines. If you can't, it was a part of it. Was it a book that I read? I don't remember, but it was basically saying, before you write it down, like start writing it out either in the novel form. This is post outline. If you can't tell the story just by yourself, beat for beat, and have your audience member at the edge of their seat, you need to rethink your story.
Yeah, it's good. It's very good. Very good. Well, I hope you enjoyed Aunt Pat's story. The story itself inspires.
That is inspiring as heck. That's awesome.
Well, thank you. She was some kind of lady. I'll miss her a lot.
World history right there.
It is.
That's large scale world history. That's really cool.
we talk about, you know, at your graduation ceremony of at the commencement, they always talk about, now it's time to change the world. And well, she did. She left the world in a better place. And I hope that inspires you in your world just to leave the world in a better place. And it can start right there with somebody right beside you. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be the whole world, you know, but whatever God puts in your pathway, you know, to champion or to overcome your fear to help somebody else out. Mm-hmm. Just want to encourage you with this story, and also encourage you if you got a real story to tell. Hey, look at that. It lines up with story structure. Pretty cool how that happens. Hey, so great story. Yeah.
We've got this thing coming up, just to kind of sidetrack. I do have one final question for you before we end out tonight.
Yeah.
We've got The Art of the Start.
Yes.
The end of January. Right. I think you actually finally nailed down a date.
I did. We're going to go for January that's next year. January 29. Next year. January 29, Saturday, January 29th, we're going to do a seminar called The Art of the Start, how to get your story started. So this is a great way to, like, it's brand new year, brand new start. If you're saying, I really want to get started, but I don't know how, or I'm kind of getting stuck or whatever, we're going to present a seminar for you. And it's going to be absolutely free. So it's like, I just want to pour into you guys. So it's going to be like maybe 3 hours kind of thing. And we'll have a group session. Jump on Zoom and we'll talk with each other. And I'll coach you through stuff, whatever, all that kind of stuff. So it'll be a lot of fun. And I'll step you through what you need to do to get your story started. So if you ever have that, like, oh, I've been wanting to do this for years, but I never get around to it. I know I should do it, but time is running out. Or it's like, I know I've got something burning in me, but I don't know how do I do it? So all that kind of stuff, we're gonna help solve those problems, get you over those humps and get you writing that story. So it'll be, imagine that you get your story finally written. You finally get it on the page. You finally get it out there. That's what we're going to help you do. It's called The Art of the Start. It's January 29. And we'll also have a group coaching session. So if you have a question, a burning question, just jump on there and we'll talk about it and we'll get you through it.
And to register for it, just so I can send out Zoom links and everything, you do need to be registered for it. So I can we're not going to broadcast the Zoom link for everybody because that's how horror stories happen.
Yes.
Please email us at storychatwithjohn@gmail.com. You'll be put on a list and you will receive the Zoom link when it is ready to go out.
Yep. Excited about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Very exciting. Yeah. Cause it's one of many, you want to keep doing this as a normal thing, right?
Yeah. Do that. And, I'll have also opportunity for like coaching sessions. If you want one-on-one sessions, if you want group sessions, so all kinds of stuff after that. But I want to just pour into you guys, just pour in and just help you. You know, what I can do to get you going.
I said one question, but I lied. Yeah. I actually got two. Okay. Is when are we going to see her her story as either a radio drama, book, or TV show? Like, when's that?
You know, that occurred to me on the plane. It's like, you know, I need to get her story out there. Talk about a story. Yeah, man. Yeah, it needs to get out there
in some facet.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Second, final leaving thoughts is what was the best piece of advice your aunt ever gave you? Something that just stuck.
Oh, I loved it. Besides the one where I gave the keynote speech, speak from your heart. And that's a good note for a writer. Write from your heart. And she said something I think is a good life advice to leave with. She said, she's 92. Okay. She was sharp of mind, by the way, and spry and just right on top and alert and looking at you. And she's just amazing lady. She says, you're never too old to dream. And there's something about that. She's talking about the importance of dreams. And the Bible says, without vision, the people perish. Without dreams, we just live complacent, pitiful lives, you know? You're never too old to dream. And the sense there is, and she did that. Like at 86, she wanted to ride a motorcycle, you know? And the sense is there is, if you've got a dream, follow it. Follow that dream. It's something in your heart, a passion. You know you're called to do something. Go for it. And let perfect love overcome any fear you've got. And you'll change the world.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Story Chat.
If you want to hear more, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. If you have any questions for John or feedback on the show, please email us at storychatwithjohn@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.